This past week has been tough. I was not at all excited when I heard the news that the governor decided to extend the stay-at-home order with slight modifications, none of which would permit us to, within keeping of the law, come out and assemble. And I'll be honest with you, I am tired. You know, there's that old saying I keep thinking of, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of all this talk about being sick. And it's making me tired. I'm worn out. I'm feeling weary. This whole situation, these circumstances that we are living in now, they're wearing me down. And yet I know that as Christians, we are not supposed to grow weary in doing what is good. I think about what Paul said to the Thessalonians in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 13, where he says, "But as for you, brethren, do not grow weary in doing good." Now, obviously, in this context, the doing good that he's speaking of is actually the action of discipline. You look back at verses 11 and 12, and he's saying, you know, when there's an unruly brother, somebody who's not listening, don't associate with them. And then he encourages the brethren, because he knows that's going to be difficult. He says, don't grow weary in doing what is good. Perhaps a more general do good passage we might find in Galatians chapter 6. In verse 9, where the Apostle Paul says, "Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary." Now there, I think that the doing good is a much more general, because in verse 10, he goes on and says, "So then while you have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of faith." And so when it comes to doing good, that's something that we as Christians are not supposed to grow tired in. We're not supposed to be weary of doing what is good, what God wants us to do. And as he talked about here in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9, he promises us that in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. But as James talks about in James chapter 5, verses 7 and 8, he talks about the idea there that we've got to be patient. Just like the farmer is patient waiting for the first rains and the later rains, right? We have to, you put that seed in the ground, it doesn't just sprout up immediately. You've got to be patient, you've got to wait for it. And so sometimes the good that we have to do, it's going to take some time to see some fruit of that. And Paul is telling us, don't grow weary. It will bear fruit if you will hang in there, if you will continue doing what is good. But let's be honest, there is a huge danger in growing weary, of being tired out, of being worn down. Yeah, I think about we were doing this this Bible reading with the kids here this last week in Matthew chapter 4. The temptations of Jesus, the things that he experienced. And I think it's interesting in Matthew's account. In Matthew chapter 4, in verse 1, it says, "Then Jesus, after his baptism, he was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And after he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he then became hungry." I think that that is a gross understatement of what would be happening if you went 40 days and 40 nights of fasting. And now all of a sudden you become, he has got to be really hungry. I know how I feel when I go 4 hours without eating, right? And it's interesting, it's when he then became hungry, we read in verse 10, "And the tempter came to him and said, 'If you're the Son of God, command that these stones become bread.'" What a temptation that would have been for Jesus in that particular moment. If the devil had come to him 40 days ago after he just sat down for a big meal, that's not a temptation. His belly's full, but now his belly's empty. It's grumbling. And as he thinks about the fact that, boy, I could turn that stone into a nice, warm, fresh loaf of bread. You know, my mouth almost starts watering just thinking about that. But that's what the devil does. He tries to get us at the time when we're the weakest, at the time when he's going to have the greatest chance of breaking down our barriers. You know, I think about what Paul told the Corinthians, maybe as kind of a practical way of illustrating this. In the 7th chapter of 1 Corinthians, Paul is answering some questions that the Corinthian brethren had about marriage and husband and wife relationships and things like that. And apparently they had asked, you know, is it good for a man not to touch a woman? Well, Paul goes on to explain that that's not just a blanket statement. There are contexts in which it certainly is bad for a man to touch a woman. But he goes on and says in verse 2, because of sexual immoralities, each man is to have his own wife and each woman is to have her own husband. Right? God has given us that marriage relationship in which we can act upon those desires. He gives us the proper context in which to do that. If you do that outside of that context, it's sexual immorality. It's not right. It's a violation of God's will. But God has given us that relationship so that we can channel those desires in the proper way. And he goes on and he says, the husband is to fulfill the duty to his wife and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife doesn't have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband doesn't have authority over his own body, but the wife does. But notice what he says in verse 5. He says, stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again. There may be some times when it is appropriate for a husband and wife to make an agreement and say, we need to take a little bit of break from the physical aspect of our relationship so that we can devote ourselves to prayer, so that we can devote ourselves to this thing that we're doing for God exclusively. But he says, make sure that that's not an indefinite time period. Make sure that it's with the understanding that you are going to come back together. Why? So that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. It's when things are not going well in a marriage and there's not that intimacy there. That's when Satan will try to take advantage of you because you're weak, because you're vulnerable. And he'll either do that or he'll just try to catch you totally off guard. You know, there's this passage in 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5 in verse 8. Where Peter admonishes us to be sober, be of sober spirit, be on the alert, for your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. I used to think as a kid, that's the dumbest strategy that the devil could have. Going around, roaring, and letting everybody know where he's at. Right? Because I had a picture in my mind of the lion walking down the city street, roaring. Well, where's everybody going to go when you hear a roaring lion? You're going to go inside and lock the doors. Right? But that's not the image that Peter is drawing on here. It's out in the savannah where the gazelles are grazing. And they're at peace, and that lion is stalking up closer and closer under the grass and waiting till he's close enough to pounce. But what lions do just before they pounce is they'll oftentimes let out a big roar. And what that does, we've all seen the deer in the headlights look. That's what it does to those animals. Scares them, and they're frozen for just long enough for that lion to pounce on them. And that's what the devil does too. He's not stupid. He's smart. And he will take advantage of us when we are the most vulnerable. And there's a sense in which being off guard and unprepared is another form of being vulnerable, being weak, not having our guard up. But we have to resist him. We have to, as Peter says here, we have to stand firm in our faith. Verse 9, he says, resist him firm in your faith, knowing that the same experience of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world. We can't give in to the suffering and the struggle and the hardship, even if that suffering and hardship results from resisting the devil. We still have to resist. We cannot give up. We have need of endurance, as the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 10. Start with me in verse 32. He says, but remember the former days. This is Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 32. He says, but remember the former days when after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict of sufferings, partly by being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulations, and partly by becoming sharers with those who were so treated. Let me just pause here and make this observation real quick. Because sometimes when we think about enduring persecution, we think that it's got to be some sort of physical harm against us, like somebody's beating us up or something like that, or somebody's throwing us in prison or something like that, or somebody's threatening your life. But did you notice what he said they endured? Certainly some were thrown in prison, but others shared in that suffering, not themselves being thrown in prison, but being joined with those who were. Not forsaking them and saying, well, I don't know that guy. He said, I know him, he's my brother. But even less than that, he talked about the idea that they were made a public spectacle through reproaches. People were saying bad things about them. And they were looking bad in the public eye. Now, obviously, the Hebrew writer wouldn't say that that was a good thing unless what they were being reproached for was indeed in keeping with God's will. But understand this, guys, that when we do what is right, the world is not always going to like that. And they may say bad things about us. And that is a form of suffering. And the Hebrew writer says, you guys were good. You endured those things. He says, you showed sympathy to the prisoner and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and a lasting one. Therefore, because we know that we're not supposed to be here forever, but we're looking to our eternal home, he says, therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you've done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. For yet in a very little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. The Hebrew writer says, you guys are doing a good job. You've endured a lot. What do you need? You need to keep enduring. You had need of more endurance. You have to keep going. You can't grow weary. You can't give up. You can't turn back. Because if you turn back, that will lead to destruction. I pray that we don't allow ourselves to be overcome with weariness or discouragement in the face of the suffering and tribulation that we endure in our lives. And this instance, this circumstance in our country, and the rules that are being made, and the threat of this virus that is out there, this may be some sort of tribulation. It's a difficult time, there is no doubt. I pray that we will not give up. That what the Hebrew writer says here to his audience could equally be said about us. Notice what he says in verse 39, but we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. I pray that that is true about us. But the reality is that enduring is hard. It takes strength. It takes energy. The good news is that when we are weary, we can find rest and strength in our Lord. I think about what Jesus said when he offers this invitation in Matthew chapter 11 and verse 28 for those who are weary and heavy laden. Remember what he says there, Matthew chapter 11 and verse 28. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. He says in verse 29, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. And I think that's an important point to make. Jesus promises us that if we'll come to him, we will have rest. But it's not always going to be a physical rest. It's a rest for our souls. And I think what he's talking about there is that when we are in a right relationship with him, we will have a peace. We will have a comfort. We will have a contentment in that knowledge that we are right with God. And that is a rest. And ultimately, if we will not grow weary, we'll receive the ultimate rest in heaven with him. But I think even this knowledge, while we're still living in this life, of knowing that I'm doing my best to serve my God in the way that he wants me to, in a way that's pleasing to him, that's in keeping with his will, and I know that he's watching out for me. And so then it doesn't matter what happens to me in this life. And so that, in and of itself, for me, gives me strength. Yes, it's an inner strength, but that gives me strength then to face the outward, the physical pain and hardships and sufferings that we go through in this life. This knowledge can give us the strength to endure whatever it is that we face. I like the way that King David puts it in Psalm 63, talking about this idea of strength coming from the Lord to make it through difficult times. In Psalm 63, beginning in verse 1, he says, "O God, you are my God. I shall seek you earnestly. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh yearns for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. Thus I have seen you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory, because your loving kindness is better than life. My lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. I will lift up my hands in your name. My soul is satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth offers praises with joyful lips. When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches, for you have been my help. And in the shadow of your wings, I sing for joy. My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me." David was clearly looking to God for his strength to make it through the terrible, difficult things that he endured in his life. And guys, the reality is that when it comes to giving us strength to face the struggles and difficulties of this life, it is the Lord and the Lord alone who has the strength and the power to be able to do that for us. Remember what Isaiah says in Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah chapter 40, beginning in verse 21, he says, "Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been declared to you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in. He it is who reduces rulers to nothing, who makes the judges of the earth meaningless. Scarcely have they been planted. Scarcely have they been sown. Scarcely has their stock taken root in the earth. But he merely blows on them and they wither, and the storm carries them away like stubble. To whom then will you liken me, that I would be his equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these stars. The one who leads forth their hosts by number, he calls them all by name. Because of the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one of them is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and assert, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and the justice due me escapes the notice of my God? Do you not know? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, he does not grow weary or tired. His understanding is inscrutable. Furthermore, he gives strength to the weary. And to him who lacks might, he increases power. And though youths grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. Our God is able to give us the strength that we need to endure anything. And you think, well, that's great, Josh. That's a great principle. That's great to know that. But how? How does God give us that strength? Because that's what I need right now. I know He'll give it, but how is He going to give it to me? How is He going to strengthen me? Well, I think there are several ways that we could point to. Go back to Hebrews, the 12th chapter. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, the Hebrew writer says, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." One of the ways that God strengthens us and encourages us is He gives us examples to look to of people who have gone through difficult things. Here specifically, He's saying, are you getting tired? Are you getting weary? Is it hard to endure? Look at what your Lord's done for you. Look at what He endured for you. The cross was no small thing. And again, remember, it wasn't just that Jesus died on a cross. It wasn't just that a man died on a cross. I mean, that would be bad enough. But He was mocked. He was ridiculed. He was taunted. You think that would be bad too? People hurling abuse at Him. But it's even worse than that, because He wasn't just a man. He was God. And when they said, "If you are the Son of God, come down from there," He could have done it. But He restrained Himself. And not only that, but while He was hanging on the cross, feeling that excruciating physical pain and torment that He was enduring, there was something even greater happening. He was bearing our sins in His body on the cross. What hardship. What sacrifice. But He endured that. Here the Hebrew writer says, for the joy set before Him. To know that by His sacrifice, we could be redeemed. And so we certainly can look to Jesus and to our God and what He's done for us as strength from Him. But also here in this text, it wasn't just Jesus that the Hebrew writer pointed to. He started that off by saying, since we have such great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us. Well, go back and read the 11th chapter of Hebrews, where He has outlined who this great cloud of witnesses are. And it's all of these people going all the way back to Abel, who put their faith in God, who were mistreated, who suffered hardship, but they consistently tried their best to serve the Lord. And because of that, their faith was credited to them as righteousness. And so we can look to those who've gone before us and made it through hard times. And we can gain strength from that. But we read that passage in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 9, where He said we were to stand firm in our faith, resisting the devil. You remember the last part of that verse? He said, knowing that your brethren in other places are enduring the same kinds of suffering as you. There's strength in knowing that we are not alone in our struggle. And even though we may not see one another all of the time, there are brethren, even in other places, who are facing the same difficulties that we are. And we can gain strength from seeing how they are enduring the suffering. But I think sometimes He strengthens us by using us as His instruments to strengthen us. Oftentimes, Paul would express in his letters how he was encouraged or refreshed or comforted by the actions of his brethren in other places. There's a couple occasions when Paul is so distressed about with concern about how are the brethren over here doing, is that he can't take it anymore. He has to send somebody to go check on them and bring word back to him. Right? He was real concerned about the Corinthians, and so he sends Titus to him, to the Corinthians. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 7, Verse 5, he says, "But even when we came into Macedonia, our flesh had no rest, but we were afflicted on every side, conflicts without, fears within."
This is terrible. I would say, I'm going nuts.
Being afflicted from the outside, and then even when I'm in my mind, it's just turmoil. I don't know. How are you? Are you still faithful? What's going on? But notice he says in verse 6, "But God, who comforts the depressed, comforted us." How? By the coming of Titus. And not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted in you. As he reported to us your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoice even more. Paul says here that God comforted him by using Titus and the Corinthians as the instrument of that comfort. Something very similar happened several years earlier when he first proclaimed the gospel in Thessalonica and then was quickly chased out of town. And he had to leave this new congregation there, new converts, in the midst of tribulation and persecution. It was so bad, he could not stay. It was so dangerous for him. They chased him out. And ever since he's left, he's wondering, how are those Thessalonian brethren doing? Are they standing firm in their faith, or have they been tempted? Have they fallen away? And he says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 1, "Therefore, when we could endure it no longer, we thought it best to be left behind at Athens alone, and we sent Timothy, our brother, and God's fellow worker in the gospel of Christ, to strengthen and encourage you as to your faith." So we're so worried about you, we couldn't take it anymore. We had to send Timothy to be back with you so that he could strengthen and encourage you. And then as we keep reading, he says, "For indeed, when we were with you, we kept telling you in advance that we're going to suffer affliction," verse 4, "and so it came to pass, as you know. For this reason, when I could endure it no longer, I also sent to find out about your faith, for fear that the tempter might have tempted you and our labor would be in vain. But now that Timothy has come to us from you and has brought us good news of your faith and love, and that you always think kindly of us, longing to see us just as we also long to see you, for this reason, brethren, in all our distress and affliction, we were comforted about you through your faith." He says, "For now we really live if you stand firm in the Lord." There's great strength that I gain when I see my brethren standing firm in the Lord. And I want to stand firm in my faith so that that can be a strength to you as well. If you're there in 1 Thessalonians, jump down to chapter 5 and verse 14 and notice a specific instruction that we are given, a duty that we are given to one another. Paul says, "We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone." Part of our duty to one another is to encourage the faint-hearted and help the weak. Now, we oftentimes look at this in the context of the person who's faint-hearted is because they've been fighting against temptation or against sin. Right? The one who's weak is maybe not one who's succumbed yet to sin, but they're struggling against temptation. And as a result, they're in a weakened state. But I would suggest to you that we don't need to limit the responsibility to encourage and strengthen to somebody who's only weak because of temptation. Someone who's only weak because of sin. What if it's just suffering? What if it's a physical thing? And it's weighing on them so much, and it's keeping them away from their brethren so much that they are growing weak in their faith. And maybe they're kind of at the point where they're saying, what is the point of this? And they're ready to throw in the towel and give up. Let me tell you what, those people are weak. And they need to be encouraged. They need to be strengthened. And that is a responsibility that we have for one another. Whenever we see someone who is weak, for whatever reason, we need to strengthen them. Because remember, weakness equals opportunity for the devil to come in and tempt us. And he doesn't care how he gets us away from God. He doesn't care if you just go full-blown pursuing sin or if you just throw in the towel and give up. He doesn't care. He just doesn't want you serving God. Therefore, as the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 12, strengthen the hands that are weak and the knees that are feeble, and make straight paths for your feet, so that the limb which is lame, may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. We are told to strengthen and help one another to stay the course, to remain on the right path, to not stumble and fall. We do that for one another. We can provide strength for one another. Yes, ultimately that strength is coming from God, but we're the instrument that He is using to deliver that strength to one another. So this morning I want to encourage us to not let ourselves grow weary in doing what is good, but rather let us look to the Lord for strength, and let us look to see what we can do to strengthen one another. And we can rest assured that God knows what we're going through, and He will be there for us. Even if we don't realize it right now, even if we don't see it right now or ever see it in this life, God is there for us. And the truth is, it may only be in the next life that we fully comprehend and understand just how much God was here for us in this difficult time. But the only way that we're going to see that, to come to that full understanding, is if we will not grow weary, if we will endure until the end. Let me close my lesson this morning by reading Christ's letter to the church at Smyrna. And then the lesson will be yours. This is found in Revelation chapter 2, verses 8 through 11. The Lord Jesus says, "And to the angel of the church in Smyrna write, the first and the last, who was dead and who has come to life, says this, I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich. And the blasphemy by those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison so that you will be tested. And you'll have tribulation for 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death."